The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com.
And hello again, wrestling fans. Welcome to another edition of This Week in History. This week, we are going to look at the week of April 29th through May 5th. And we have our regular things involving headlines, births, deaths. I noticed a little bit of a glitch on the slides for the birthdays. It still says deaths, but, you know, it happens. Anyways, we have title changes, a lot of title changes going on, and just a few events, you know, our regular stuff. We're going to look at Miss Elizabeth and also the Big Boss Man in our superstar spotlights. And we'll discuss everything that happened, including the plane ride from hell. That's all come up. We want to thank you for joining us on Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere else you get your podcast from. We are video-wise on Rumble, YouTube, and Facebook. So we thank you for however you watch us. Give us a like, share it. We are on our way to 1,000 fans on our Facebook page, and we got a lot during our March Madness, so we thank you for joining us. If you're one of those members, share, and let's build this up to at least 1,000. We also want to welcome our other sponsor, which is Hammerlock Pure Wrestling, and Hammerlock Pure Wrestling is bringing back the golden age of pro wrestling, and this Saturday, May 14th, a week a little bit from now, is going to be Hammerlock Pure Wrestling at the Saxonia Hall in Elmer, Ontario. There's going to be some great matches. You don't want to miss it. Plus, I'm doing my in-ring debut as the ring announcer for Hammerlock Pure Wrestling. So a lot of good things coming up. We'll be incorporating more stuff with Hammerlock over the next while, doing more for the Ontario scene. You'll see what's going on once things get rolling. A little revamping going on over the next little while. But we will still keep doing the history. And to do that, we need to go over to Niagara Falls and welcome in Jonesy. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Another week gone, another week to run down.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, you had some exciting news working on getting your license. So you had to explore the
quote. That's right. I'm even now on the highway. So look out for me.
Yeah. Women and children, get off the sidewalks.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I've been doing it with Apex Driving School here in Niagara Falls. I believe they're also in London. There are a lot of cities in Ontario. So far, so great. Great in class, and the driving instructor I have is just a wonderful man. And I've had 5 lessons, and I'm already on the highway. So
a nice shout out to Apex, and if you're looking for getting driving school, we'll send you their way and see what they can do for you. But and a lot of good things coming up.
Yeah, and I believe this weekend is the Rose Derby, or there's a big horse race coming up this Saturday, I believe. It could be Sunday, but I know my wife has a horse she wants to bet on. So if you do want to do anything like that, don't forget coolbet.com and sportsbook betting and casino games can help you out with that. Let's go to the
headlines. Let's do some headlines.
All right, the headlines. 11 years ago, April 29th, 2011, Nicholas Wilson, a.k.a. ZZW's Nick Gage, is sentenced to 5 years in prison for a second-degree robbery. He would get paroled on May 31st, 2015, but wait, there's more. Gage would be arrested again in September for a parole violation. He would be released from prison in November of 2016.
Yeah, and unfortunately, due to Dark Side of the Ring and that, they kind of gave him a good spotlight, and AEW even gave him a moment in the ring. And yeah, just honestly, from this report of the whole robbery and everything, and what I saw of him on You Can't Kill David Arquette, and he almost killed David Arquette, this guy is a dirtbag.
He's a bit of a dirtbag, but I tell you, he does have a talent for not getting killed while getting hurt.
Yeah.
I got to give it to him. He is a... I would pay to see him wrestle. I would, and I use the term wrestle loosely, but what he does is entertainment to some, maybe not to all, but I respect that type of entertainment.
You fit in well with our friend Warhead and everybody over at No Ring North, and they're having WrestlePania coming up very shortly.
Nice. On the same day, WWE launched its Be a Star anti-bullying campaign, STAR, which stands for Show Tolerance and Respect. Hard to believe that's 11 years ago already.
Somebody needs to teach Nick Gage to be a star.
Yes. 7 years ago, April 29th, 2015, Jeff Hardy breaks his leg in a dirt bike accident. YouTube this one if you wish. Matt Hardy is the one behind the camera. 12 years ago, April 30th, 2010, WWE released Hall of Famer Tony Atlas, who had been working with ECW, but with the brand shut down, Tony was out of a job.
Yeah, and he'd just been, at one point he was like the Ed McMahon of a talk show that ECW was having, and then that guy got fired, and he was starting to be a manager, and yeah, unfortunately, Tony, thanks for coming.
Interesting story on Tony Atlas. If you read through his career and the big downfall he had living in a park, and then he met, I believe it was his to-be wife, and saved him, and he got back into at least somewhat of the wrestling gig, because he was entertaining on the Legends House.
Yes, in Legends House we found out that he has a foot fetish.
And hey, yeah. 12 years ago, April 30th, 2010, TNA announces in a statement that they have fired Todd Glem, a.k.a. Bubba the Love Sponge. This came after the Sponge said some negative comments about a devastating earthquake in Haiti. Austin Kong, who was raising money for the relief fund, would physically attack the Sponge at a TNA taping backstage.
Yeah, he's the same dirtbag that Hulk Hogan apparently slept with his wife, and it was recorded. And thanks to all that, Hogan ended up winning all his money from Gawker.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. Someone like the Sponge, I wouldn't. Sorry, if you've slept with that woman recently, I wouldn't be sleeping with her. No offense. 10 years ago, April 30th, 2010, on Raw, the Bella Twins would have their final match for about a year after losing to Layla in 10 seconds, as they challenged for the WWE Divas title in a triple threat match. 31 years ago, May 1st, 1991, at an NWA taping in Alabama, Paul Heyman would return for his second run with the company. Heyman, as Paul E. Dangerously, would form the Dangerous Alliance and would double as a broadcaster for NWA, WCW telecasts until his firing in 1992. Yeah, you look at Paul E.'s career, it's interesting how his body has changed over the years.
Yeah, I'd be kind of worried about him.
I wouldn't consider him fat back then. He was just a little pudgy maybe. But now, yeah, he's a whale.
Yeah, as I said, I'd be worried about him like they were with William Moody, a.k.a. Paul Bearer, and seeing about getting him healthy. Like, the guy just keeps on gaining weight, and he got his original name because he looked like like Johnny Dangerously, which was Michael Keaton, and that's why he went with Paul E. Dangerously. So
yeah, I can see that.
I seem to be missing that slide. I'm trying to get it, but you can carry on with the.
Oh, that's it, man! You're fired.
Fired.
16 years ago, May 1st, 2006, Joey Styles, in a worked shoot, quit the WWE during an edition of Raw from Columbus, Ohio. He had a fantastic speech just bashing the WWE for not letting him do his job. And you called him, he didn't call you. This was all set up so he could jump to the reboot of ECW in WWE.
Yeah, it was one of the original pipe bombs.
15 years ago, May 1st, 2007, Tough Enough 3 winner Matt Copatelli underwent surgery in Boston, Massachusetts to remove a malignant brain tumor. Though the surgery was a success, the former OVW champion would never wrestle again. He would become a trainer for OVW's beginner program. In May of 2018, that guy would seize medical...
Capitelli.
Thank you, Capitelli. Sometimes it's... my brain just doesn't... wow. Anyways. For the tumor. He died on June 29, 2018 at the age of 38.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate talent that got wasted by cancer hitting him.
Oh, right. Yes, that is a bummer. Darn you, cancer. 20 years ago, May 2nd, 2002, in Tokyo, Japan, NJPW's Masahiro Chono and pro wrestling's Noah Michihara Misawa fought to a 30-minute time limit draw in an interpromotional match.
Easy
29 years ago, May 3rd, 1993, at a NJPW Wrestling Dannataku 93 in Japan, WWF Champion Hulk Hogan defeated IWGP Champion The Great Muta in an untitled match. Hogan got in some hot water after a pre-match interview where he claimed that the IWGP title was the only one he wanted and the WWF title was just a toy. Bastard.
Blasphemy. Yeah, so I did get the photo for those watching. It's up there. Going just back to Paul Heyman. Like I said, you look at him right there with his brick cell phone and all that, and you can definitely tell he was... going with that Johnny Dangerously Michael Keaton look at that time. And he had the Dangerous Alliance, which was a very underrated faction for its time, especially when you had guys like Larry Zbysko, Arn Anderson, Rick Rude, Medusa, Bobby Eaton, and Stunning Steve Austin all a part of it.
You forgot the beautiful Bobby Eaton. He was beautiful back then, wasn't he?
He was.
All right. 24 years ago, May 3rd, 1998, at a WWF house show in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, Christian Cage made his WWF debut, losing to Edge, a.k.a. Adam Copeland.
Yeah, and we've discussed it before, and I will be sharing it with you later on privately. I found that match card from... Western Fair when the Suicide Blondes, which was Sexton Hardcastle and Christian Cage, went against each other because their opponents didn't show up.
Ah. Yeah, and I have that, but I don't know where it went.
Yep,
it's gone to the Great Beyond. Same as I got signature on a... the Wendy's menu, or no, Arby's, I think it was. Anyways, of some wrestlers back in 93, I think. Anyways, May 3rd, 1998 would be the last public appearance of the Junkyard Dog at an ECW Wrestlepalooza. Prior to the event, a legend ceremony was held honoring Dick Slater, Bob Armstrong, the Assassin, and the Dog. 19 years ago, May 3rd, 2003, it was a sad day for the Iron Sheik's family as his 27-year-old daughter was found dead in the apartment shared by her boyfriend. The boyfriend would confess to the murder.
Yeah, that took a huge toll on Sheik, obviously with his daughter passing away like she did and, well, being murdered. If you find the, I believe it's Netflix documentary from years ago, called Sheik, you can see how everything unfolded at that point, and that might have been one of the reasons why he sort of is a little bit considered off the deep end to this day. Like, he's very eccentric compared to what he had been. And
I believe that was a character change. Watching that documentary actually, at least in my eyes, made me understand his nuttiness more. It's more of an act, because the guy that is with him in that helps him with his media and gets some appearances and kind of the caretaker somewhat of Iron Sheik, he kind of was able to get that out of the Sheik. And because from what I've seen from the Sheik when other parts of it, he's very down to earth. It's just when it's it's the same thing with Bob Backlund. Bob Backlund, you'd think he's absolutely fucking nut squirrely, but he actually isn't. That's just the character he's decided to play. And he plays it all the time like that. It's very rare that he doesn't put on that character. So I don't think the Sheik is as crazy as he seems, but take him or leave him. 19 years ago, May 3rd, 2003. I already read that. 8 years ago, May 4th. Yeah, just go through the sadness again. 8 years ago, May 4th, 2014, on Raw from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, former NXT champion Sami Zayn makes his WWE main roster debut as the latest mystery challenger in the John Cena United States Open Challenge. Unfortunately, Sami would get injured just as the match started, but kept going. I actually enjoyed that whole thing because that they were getting good matches on Raw with anyone that was wrestling John Cena during that U.S. Open Challenge.
Yeah, it was a way of also bringing up some NXT guys just for a one-off potential appearance and see if they're ready to come up.
May 5th, 2001, Jericho defeated William Regal by submission to win the Queen's Cup at the Insurrection pay-per-view in England. 20 years ago, May 5th, 2002, World Wrestling Federation Entertainment, Inc. becomes World Wrestling Entertainment. Just days after the Court of Appeal for England and Wales upheld in October 2001, ruling alleging that the WWF was in breach of an agreement with the World Wildlife Fund. This would lead to the annoying blurring of the old logo and classic matches for years to come. Get the F out.
Yeah, that one was interesting. And I get, in a way, what it was more, I think, due to the booming of the internet and stuff like that, because if you wanted to support the World Wildlife Fund, you're going to probably put in WWF.org naturally for that, because it's an organization. But people supposedly were getting confused between WWF.org and .com, and they didn't want to be confused with the wrestling, and that's where they sort of went for the lawsuit in that regards and forced WWE have to change, which is amazing that in this case it looks like Mr. McDermott ended up losing a case for Vince McMahon, because Jerry's usually a tough as nails attorney, and even got him acquitted from all the steroid stuff.
Yeah, but in the end, I think it was actually a good thing. Just too bad they had to blur all that shit out. So if you own a whole bunch of, you know, DVDs and stuff like that, you got that for life. I understand blurring some things out, but when it came to like the turnbuckles, it was like, really? Like,
yeah, imagine your job having to go through all the video footage just to do that, to put on the network.
I would imagine it was a recognition program. However, they probably had to set it up so it would detect, but things like signs and other things that are in the background, it probably wouldn't be able to pick up. Or maybe it did, I don't know. But yeah, they'd still have to watch it, because I'm sure, again, that certain things they had to do manually to blur it out. 20 years ago, May 5th, 2002, the plane ride from hell happened. A number of, in fact, Sean, how about you go through the plane ride of hell?
Yeah, well, it was definitely covered on the Dark Side of the Ring, but a lot of things ended up happening, and this was their flight back from the Insurrection pay-per-view. We saw Michael P.S. Hayes and John Bradshaw-Layfield get into a fight. X-Pac ended up cutting off Michael Hayes' ponytail. Scott Hall passed out from drinking so much. Ric Flair walked around the plane wearing a little more than his robe and exposing himself to the female attendants. We saw how that lady was basically traumatized by that. And, well, the fallout saw Ric Flair all these years later get even more punished by society. But anyways, carrying on.
He kind of deserves it.
Oh, I'm not saying he doesn't, for sure.
But in the same, it's Ric Flair. You got to understand that he was also playing a character. So it's that blurred line.
Dustin Reynolds, he was having issues with his marriage with Terry. But he got in on the PA system and badly attempted to serenade Terry during that flight. Kurt Hennig and Brock Lesnar ended up getting into a tussle, which they were near the emergency exit doors, and there was worry that they were going to pop that open. Jim Ross was on the plane and ended up taking the brunt of the blame for it, even though Vince was also on the plane and could have stepped in, but because they were all under JR's watch, he took a lot of the blame for it. And it was a 7-hour flight. They went through, if I recall right, on the Dark Side of the Ring, they went through 3 carts of alcohol because they were grounded and not able to fly at one point. So they had already gone through all the alcohol a couple times and got reloaded before the plane even took off.
That was the fault of the airline for not cutting them off, no matter who they are, because as a server, there's a cutting point.
Yep. And as I said, the fallout would see Scott Hall released. Dustin Reynolds was in the doghouse until he left the company. Hennig was fired, and 2 flight attendants sued the WWE. Flair, Hall, and Reynolds for sexual harassment, and that would be settled out of court. The incident came up, as I said, during Dark Side of the Ring, and Rick is losing out on a lot of endorsements. He even was rumored at the time to have been going to AEW to be with his future son-in-law, Andrade, when this all aired, and quickly Tony Khan went, not on my watch. You're not coming over to work for us. Nothing publicly said, but Rick never has shown up in AEW, so pretty much got screwed out of a future employment over with Tony Khan and family.
Yep, and this whole thing is one of the big reasons why that documentary show has been canceled, is because they went too far with it, even though I agree with how far they went, because they exposed a lot of stuff that's been hidden for years. But in the same, when you've got cooperation from a lot of these wrestlers from the WWE, and you basically bury the company and make them look really bad, it's gonna happen. Yep. So it's too bad that show did get canceled. It was a really good show, and I can't believe that Terry Reynolds was sued by the flight attendants.
Terry wasn't.
Well, it says Reynolds. It doesn't say which one.
Dustin.
Oh, Dustin. Well, it doesn't say.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait. That would be me now putting that in. Oh, anyways. And let's go to deaths. 19 years ago, May 1st, 2003, the world stopped for a moment when we heard the news that Elizabeth Houlette, a.k.a. Miss Elizabeth, died of acute toxicity in Marietta, Georgia. She was 42. Liz was born November 19th, 1960 in Frankfort, Kentucky. Coulette, fresh out of the University of Kentucky with a degree in communications, she would meet the Macho Man Randy Savage while working for international championship wrestling shows. The couple, the couple married in December 1994, and she would make her WWF debut the following summer as the manager of the Macho Man. Bruno Sammartino was blown away by her beauty on air, referring to her as some sort of movie star. Elizabeth would play a vital role in the storylines that would get the involvement of the always jealous Macho Man. Some of the storylines saw George Danimo Steele having a crush on her. In late 1987, Elizabeth was pushed down by the Honky Tonk Man and hit Savage with a guitar. Elizabeth would drag Hulk Hogan to the ring for the rescue and form the Mega Powers. She distracted Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase with her legs and firm bump for the win at the first SummerSlam in 1988. Of course, the Mega Powers would explode. Savage would turn super heel and become a king with the beautiful Queen Sherry. But Elizabeth would return a year later to Macho's match against Warrior at WrestleMania 7 and rescue her man for the deranged Queen Sherry. Elizabeth and Macho Man would marry for the cameras at SummerSlam, and sometime later they got divorced. But she still would work together in WCW. Following the end of her WCW run, she worked the front desk at Main Event Fitness, a gym Luger and Sting opened together. Just weeks before her death, Elizabeth was involved in a domestic dispute with Luger, alleging that he struck her at their home. Luger would be charged with a misdemeanor battery and released on $2,500 bond. Then 2 days later, Luger was arrested for DUI after rear-ending another car with the Lex Express. On May 1st, 2003, Luger called 911 and reported Houlette was not breathing. She would be rushed to a hospital where she was pronounced dead. As reported in the Marietta Daily Journal, her death would be ruled an accidental overdose as she had a 0.29 alcohol level, more than triple the legal limit to drive in Georgia. Luger would be charged with 13 felony counts of distribution of dangerous drugs. He would be released on $25,500 bail and would plead guilty and receive a fine of $1,000 and 5 years probation. And Luger, we don't forgive you fully. 26 years ago, May 3rd, 1996, Carly Rae Stevens died in his home of a heart attack in Fremont, California. He was 60 years old. Born September 5th, 1935, in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, Stevens wrestled from the age of 15. His first major championship win came in August of 59 after winning the NWA World Tag Belt as the Shire Brothers. He would start using his real name and became a bumper. He is said to have invented the turnbuckle flip, and his finisher was called Bombs Away. I've seen that man, if you are looking at video, or if you ever pull a picture up of this guy, seeing that guy doing that turnbuckle flip would be pretty cool to see. He looks like he's a 300-pounder. He would also hold the NWA tag belts in 65 with Pat Patterson, calling themselves the Blonde Bombers. He would continue to hold more titles, including the AWA tag belts three times with Nick Bockwinkel and Patterson, and three more NWA tag belts. In 71, Stevens would work in the WWF with classy Freddie Blassie as Crippler Steve Williams. His time would be short there as 30 years of road and the wrestling landscape changed would take a toll on him. He would return to the AWA and retire in 92. He would pass away in 96 at age of 60.
Yeah, and our other in memorial is 20 years ago, 2002 on May 5th, Randall Anderson, best known as WCW referee Randy Anderson, died of testicular cancer in his home in Rome, Georgia. He was only 42 years old. Same with Elizabeth. Anderson was state wrestling champion at 119 pounds in Georgia, began reffing his career in Mid-South Wrestling in 78, NWA affiliate JCP in 85, and of course in WCW. Randy was the ref for the six-man tag at the Bash at the Beach that ended with the formation of the NWO. In fact, he ref the match while battling testicular cancer. He would leave for medical treatment, and in 99 he had to go to into retirement to battle his cancer. He would die on May 5th, 2002 at age of 42, and his wife and daughter and son, who appeared on Nitro with him, would when he battled for his job after being kayfabe fired. So I think we've talked about that part before. Go back to 83 weeks and I'm not sure which episode it is with Bischoff, but the people from Randy's hometown actually were up in arms about him being fired, knowing what he was going through. And it was his church, should I say, that ended up contacting CNN Center and WCW, and Bischoff got pulled in to explain himself. And it was just such a debacle, even though it was all storyline. But the people in his hometown didn't realize it, and he had to eventually correct it. But it was like,
These are the same type of people that called the U.S. Search teams and so many things when Gilligan's Island was on.
Oh, probably. And so, yeah, they ended up getting his job back, but it might have changed the storyline a bit because of how much they actually thought it was real.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to big events. 26 years ago, April 29th, 1996, New Japan Pro Wrestling presented Battle Formation 96 from the Tokyo Dome with over 65,000 in attendance to watch a showdown with the UWF, which was the inspiration of the NWO. 24 years ago, April 29th, 1998, the Heartland Wrestling Association presented the first Brian Pillman Memorial Show from Norwood, Ohio. This was to help raise funds for the family of Pillman. WWF Steve Austin and Sonny hosted. Nick Dinsmore defeated Trailer Park Trash. Reno Riggins and Steve Dunn defeated Brian Taylor and the Bounty Hunter. Al Snow defeated Chris Candido, and Chris Benoit defeated Chris Jericho. 15 years ago, April 29, 2007, World Wrestling Legends aired its only pay-per-view event from Florida. The event was taped March 5th. Coco Beware defeated Disco Inferno. Superfly Jimmy Snuka defeated Greg Valentine via DQ. Jake Roberts defeated Kamala via DQ. Mike Graham and Dory Funk Jr. defeated Tully Blanchard and David Flair. Diamond Dallas Page pinned Canyon, and Scott Steiner defeated Buff Bagwell.
Yeah, interesting. Some of those DQs, God forbid somebody goes over the other one when they're legends.
Yep. 15 years ago, April 29th, 2007, WWE presented Backlash 2012. 29 years ago, April 30th, 1993, Triple A presented the first ever Triple Mania from Mexico City. Triple Mania is Mexico's WrestleMania with over 48,000 in attendance. 22 years ago, April 30th, 2000, WWF presented Backlash. The show featured the pay-per-view return of Stone Cold Steve Austin in The Rock's corner of the main event. It was Austin's first appearance on pay-per-view since the Survivor Series. 16 years ago, April 30th, 2006, WWE presented Backlash 2006 from Kentucky. Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon defeated Shawn Michaels and God in a no-holds-barred match. John Cena defeated Triple H and Edge in a triple threat match to retain the WWE Championship.
Yep, that's true. God even got his own entrance.
Now, I remember a little bit of that, but I didn't really watch. I didn't watch the pay-per-view. I seen, you know, some of it on Raw. But were people, like, upset about that? Did they get a lot of backlash for this?
I think they did, but you could tell also they were WWE was trying to do it all tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Type deal. So if people didn't get it, that was more their problem than
yeah,
a standards and practice thing.
36 years ago, May 1st, 1986, WWF taped the sixth edition of Saturday Night's Main Event from the Providence, Rhode Island. It would air on NBC 2 days later. Hulk Hogan and the Junkyard Dog defeated Terry Funk and Hoss Funk. King Kong Bundy defeated Uncle Elmer. Adrian Adonis defeated Paul Orndorff by DQ. Jake Roberts and Ricky Steamboat fought to a no contest. The British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, and the Dynamite Kid defeated Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik 2-1 in a best of three falls match to retain the WWF Tag Team belts. 24 years ago, May 1st, 1998, All Japan Pro Wrestling presented its first solo wrestling show at the Tokyo Dome, Showdown at the Egg. A record 58,300 were in attendance for the event, the biggest show in company history. This was also the first time All Japan ran an event at the Tokyo Dome on their own. All their previous events at the Tokyo Dome were done with other promotions. 17 years ago, May 1st, 2005, WWE presented Backlash. 11 years ago, May 1st, 2011, WWE presented Extreme Rules. 35 years ago, I assume you've been out to the pancake houses. How many times have you gone this year?
Only twice.
Oh my God! What is everything okay?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. 35 years ago, May 2nd, 1987, AWA presented Super Clash 2 from the Cow Palace in Daly City, California, just 8 months away from the first. Sheik Adin El Casey defeated Buck Zomahoff. Sherry Martel defeated Medusa Miceli to retain the AWA's Women's World Championship. Kurt Hennig defeated Nick Bockwinkel to win the AWA World Heavyweight Championship, and Jimmy Snuka and Ross Francis defeated the Terrorist and the Mercenary.
Whoever they are. Yeah. I recognized one name of that four.
Oh, yeah. The Mercenary is the one that would be the second familiar one, and I don't know if that's just because, you know, you've heard the word mercenary.
Generic name.
Where it's like, yeah, the mercenary I can see more than the terrorist. I don't know.
Good old Vern Gagne.
Yep. 27 years ago, May 3rd, 1995, New Japan Pro Wrestling presented Wrestling Dontaku 95 from Japan. 24 years ago, May 3rd, 1998, ECW presented Wrestlepalooza 98 on enemy turf. 8 years ago, May 4th, 2014, WWE presented Extreme Rules. 20 years ago, May 4th, 2002, WWF presented its last show under the WWF banner, Insurrection, from Wembley Arena in London, England. There's a good trivia question right there.
Yeah, it's the same day as the plane ride from hell.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. 21 years ago, May 5th, 2001, WWF presented Insurrection from England. Maybe that's why they all got drunk and shit and went nutty, is because it was the last show under that banner.
Yeah, and what a way to make a statement with changing from WWF to WWE.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got some title changes.
A lot of title changes.
Would you like to start the title changes?
Sure, let's go with April 29th, 1996. The Great Suzuki defeated Jushin Thunder Liger for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. On April 29th, 96, Hashimoto defeated Takada via submission to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. 22 years ago on April 29th, 2000, in Bakersfield, California, Sabu defeated the Messiah in a tournament final to win the vacated XPW Heavyweight Championship. Sabu would hold it for a record 392 days and then be stripped of the belt for no showing. April 29th, 2003, in a Sunday Night Heat preview show, Jerry Lynn defeated Crash Holly to win the WWF Light Heavyweight Championship. Also on that same night, the two-man power trip, Steve Austin and Triple H, both the WWE and Intercontinental Champions, respectively, defeated the Brothers of Destruction, Kane and Undertaker, to win the WWE Tag Team Championships, and they had all the gold between the two of them. 20 years ago, April 29th, 2004, on Raw from Buffalo, Steven Richards defeated Bubba Ray Dudley to win the WWF Hardcore Championship. April 29th, 2007, Mr. McMahon, along with help from Umaga and Shane McMahon, defeated Bobby Lashley in a handicap match. By doing so, Vince McMahon made the pin and won the ECW Championship and started walking around with a lovely do-rag after that. 14 years ago on April 29th, at the SmackDown taping in Atlantic City, The Undertaker was stripped of the World Heavyweight Championship for using an illegal choke, according to GM Vicky Guerrero. April 29th, 2012, Cody Rhodes defeated Big Show in a tables match to win the WWE Intercontinental Championship, and that's when he, the following week, brought back the classic style from the age of Ricky Steamboat and Honky Tonk Man and all of them, and it was on white leather. There's rumors and hope from fans that if Cody ends up winning the WWE Championship down the line, that he will end up bringing out the Winged Eagle or the Big Eagle belt. Most people want the Winged Eagle, which people would recognize as the Randy Savage, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels championship style. Carrying on, April 29th, 2012, Layla defeated Nikki Bella to win the WWE Divas Championship. 7 years ago, on April 29th, 2015, in Japan, Kagi Maccabee defeated Tomohiro Ishii to win the Never Openweight Championship. 45 years ago, April 30th, 1977, in Baltimore, Bruno Sammartino ends his second run as the WWF champion, losing to superstar Billy Graham. Even though Graham had his feet on the ropes, the ref would make the count and give him the title. Graham, however, would lose the title the next February in similar fashion when Bob Backlund had his feet on the ropes and scored the pinfall for the title. 39 years ago, on April 30th, 1983, in Greensboro, Greg the Hammer Valentine defeated Rowdy Roddy Piper in a NWA United States Championship match. 24 years ago, on April 30th, 1998, in Augusta, Georgia, Chris Benoit defeated Booker T to win the WCW World Television Championship. For the next 4 days, the belt would change hands, ending with Fit Finlay holding the title at the end. And I'm going to tag you in for the next.
All right, April 30th, 2000, Rock defeated Triple H to win the WWF Championship. Shane McMahon was the special referee, but it was a returning Earl Hebner that counted the fall. 19 years ago, April 30th, 2003, at an NWA TNA weekly pay-per-view taping in Nashville, Tennessee, the Amazing Red defeated Kid Cash to win the TNA X Division Championship. April 30th, 2006, RVD defeated Shelton Benjamin to win the WWE IC belt. Van Damme's Money in the Bank contract was also at stake in the match. 11 years ago, April 30th, 2011, Tommaso Ciampa defeated Adam Cole to win the East Coast Wrestling Association Super 8 Tournament. April 30th, 2012, Kofi Kingston and R-Truth defeated Epico and Primo to win the WWE Tag Team Championship. 41 years ago, May 1st, 1981, in Georgia, Harley Race regained the NWA World title after defeating Tommy Rich, who won it only 4 days prior. 41 years ago, on that same day, in Richmond, Virginia, Gene and Ole Anderson defeated Paul Jones and the Masked Superstar to win the NWA World Tag titles for the eighth and final time. 28 years ago, May 1st, 1994, in Japan, Shinya Hashimoto defeated Tatsumi Fujinama to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. May 1st, 1998, Toshihaki Kawada defeated Matsuhiro Misawa. Wow, I almost get through those, but to win the All Japan Triple Crown Championship. May 1st, 2005, Rosie and the Hurricane defeated Tajiri and William Regal. The Heartthrobs, Antonio and Romero. Simon Dean and Maven and La Resistance, Rob Conway and Sylvain Grenier, in a tag team turmoil match to win the World Tag Team Championship. May 1st, 2011, Kofi Kingston defeated Sheamus in a tables match to win the WWE United States Championship. And Christian defeated Alberto Del Rio in a ladder match to win the vacated World Heavyweight Championship. Big Show and Kane defeated Wade Barrett and Ezekiel Jackson in a lumberjack match to win the WWE Tag Team Championship. And finally, in that show, John Cena defeated The Miz and John Morrison in a triple threat steel cage match to win the WWE Championship.
That was definitely a night that you were not wanting to be the champion going into that event.
Mm-hmm. May 2nd, 1987, Kurt Hennig defeated Nick Bockwinkel to win the AWA World Heavyweight Championship. 28 years ago, May 2nd, 1994, at a WCW Saturday night taping, Larry Zbyszko defeated Lord Steven Regal to win the WCW World Television Championship. This episode wouldn't air for almost a month. 28 years ago, May 2nd, 1994, at a Smoky Mountain Wrestling TV taping in Tennessee, Jake the Snake Roberts defeated the Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony, to win the SMW Heavyweight Championship. After this match aired 12 days later, it would be the last appearance of Roberts. As he disappeared from the company, no showing many events, the title would be given back to the Dirty White Boy. 26 years ago, May 2nd, 1996, at a WCW Worldwide taping, Dean Malenko defeated Otani to win the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. This would be the final time a belt changed hands on Worldwide and the only time the Cruiserweight belt changed hands on that show. May 2nd, 1999, Misawa defeated Vader to win the All Japan Triple Crown Heavyweight Championship. 22 years ago, May 2nd, 2000, at a SmackDown taping in Virginia, Chris Jericho defeated Chris Benoit to win the WWF IC belt. May 2nd, 2002, Jushin Thunder Liger and Minoru Tanaka defeated the world-class tag team Ghetto and Jado to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. 19 years ago, May 2nd, 2003, in Tokyo, Japan, Yoshiro Takayama defeated Yuji Nagata to retain the NWF Heavyweight Championship and win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship.
Well, I'll tag in for a few of these.
Absolutely. Ding!
On 30 years ago, May 3rd, 1992 in Chicago, the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, defeated Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton to win the WCW World Tag Team Championships. May 3rd, 1995, Sabu defeated Kanemoto to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Kenji Muta defeated Hashimoto to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. The win made Muta the first man to win the New Japan's top prize under different personas. He'd won it earlier as the Great Muta in 92. 16 years ago, on May 3rd, 2006, in Japan, Kenji Moto defeated Tiger Mask to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. 13 years ago, on May 3rd, 2009, at a Shimmer Volume 26 event in Chicago, Illinois, the Canadian Ninjas Nicole Matthews and Portia Perez defeated Ashley Lane and Nevaeh to win the Shimmer Tag Team Championships. They would hold on to the titles for 692 days before losing them to the Seven Star Sisters. That record title still would be beaten by the Golden Green Gangsters, Kylie Skater and Tomoka Nagawa, in April of 2015 with a 727-day reign. 11 years ago, on May 3rd, 2011, at a SmackDown taping in Orlando, only 2 days after winning the World Heavyweight Championship, Christian would drop the title to Randy Orton. On May 4th, 1994, Rick Rude would defeat Sting to win the WCW International World Heavyweight Championship, also known as, at that point, the Big Gold Belt. In what would be Rick Rude's final match, Rude severely injured his neck during the bout and would eventually be stripped of the championship. And he'd get himself a lovely Lloyd's of London insurance policy at the same time. Nice. And get that thing paid out. May 4th, 2002, Booker T defeated Stephen Richards to win the WWF Hardcore Championship, only to lose it to Crash Holly, who lost it to Booker T, only to lose it back to Stephen Richards. Hot potato with the hardcore title.
Hot potato.
18 years ago, on May 4th, 2004, at SmackDown taping in Tucson, Jacqueline defeated Chavo Guerrero to win the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. She'd be the only woman to hold the belt in WWE history. The same belt was held in WCW by two women, being Medusa and Daphne. May 4th, 2014, Bad News Barrett, I got some bad news for ya, would defeat Big E to win the WWE Intercontinental Championship.
I swear, he was right there in studio.
Exactly. May 5th, 1905, in New York City, George Hackenschmidt won the World Greco-Roman Wrestling Championship, defeating Tom Jenkins, American Heavyweight Champion, 2-0 in a best-of-three falls match to become the World Catch-as-Catch-Can Heavyweight Champion. 35 years ago, on May 5th, 1985, in Greensboro, North Carolina, Wahoo McDaniel and Mark Youngblood defeated Jack and Jerry Briscoe to win the NWA World Tag Team Titles. 8 years ago, on May 5th, 2014, on Raw from Albany, New York, Sheamus last eliminated Dean Ambrose to win a 20-man Battle Royal and the WWE United States Championship. The win ends Dean Ambrose's 351-day run as champion, the longest in WWE's era of the championship, dating back to its revival in 2003. And the third longest in history of the title, dating back to 1979, only Rick Rude at 378 days and Lex Luger at 523 days held the title longer. And now we can move on to a quick look at the Monday Night Wars. Kind of a boring week, to be honest, from what I saw. I almost, I actually did omit it accidentally. But when I was putting it back in, yeah, I'm not sure what we're looking at, but we'll quickly give a look at what the two shows had to have. We're going to look at May 4th, 1998. And Raw was in Richmond, Virginia at the Richmond Coliseum. We saw The Nation, Owen and The Rock, with D'Lo Brown, Kama Mustafa, and Mark Henry at ringside, defeating Farouk and Steve Blackman in 6 minutes and 18 seconds. Dan Severn defeated Savio Vega in just over a minute and a half. Jeff Jarrett, with Tennessee Lee in his corner, took on Mark Mero, and it ended in a no contest. D-Generation X, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, Triple H, and Chyna, with X-Pac in their corner, defeated Disciples of Apocalypse, 8-Ball and Skull, and LOD, Animal and Hawk, with Sonny in their corner, by countout in 11 minutes total. Goldust took on Kane, and it ended in a no contest in just under 2 minutes. Mick Foley defeated Terry Funk in an holds barred false count anywhere match with Pat Patterson as the guest referee, and it was 16 minutes and 32 seconds of action. And the dark match of the evening saw Farouk Steve Austin, Steve Blackman, and The Undertaker team up and defeat Jeff Jarrett, Kane, The Rock, and Triple H in an eight-man tag team match. Over on Nitro.
Over on Nitro, May 4th, 98 edition, and it was held at the Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. We saw Scott Norton defeat Chavo Guerrero Jr. with Eddie Guerrero at his side, 2 minutes and 26 seconds. Kidman versus Scott Putski ended in a no contest at 2 minutes. Chris Jericho defeated Boris Malenko. The Public Enemy defeated Hugh Morris and The Barbarian with Jimmy Hart in the corner in a tag team street fight match, about 3 minutes. Van Hammer, still getting TV time, defeated Saturn in a Loser Leaves the Flock match at 4 minutes and 16 seconds. Juventud Guerrera defeated Sick Boy by DQ in 2:41. Bryan Adams defeated Conan by DQ, 2 minutes 45 seconds. Fit Finlay defeated Booker T, who was champion at the time, to win the WCW World Television Championship in about 4 minutes. And Lex Luger defeated Kevin Nash with Conan and Randy Savage by DQ, 2 minutes and 44 seconds. I'm sorry, you have someone lose a TV title in 4 minutes, that, like, especially when it's Booker T, I don't know, that just seems kind of...
Yeah, and I'm looking at these two shows, and, you know, you have WCW with no matches going over... 4 minutes. Longest one is 4 minutes and 16 seconds, and that was Hammer and Saturn, of all people. And that's their whole show. Meanwhile, over on WWE on Raw, there's an 11-minute eight-man tag team match. There's the almost 17-minute Foley and Funk match. The Nation and Farouk and Blackman even went just over 6. Like, the some decent TV time matches, considering everything going on, and a lot of star power. I think more so on Raw that night would have definitely kept me watching over WCW. Can only imagine all the skits that were going on during WCW Nitro that night.
Oh yes, a lot of yakety yak. Moving on to the birthdays. April 29th, we got Paul Roma turning 62. Oksana turns 40. Titus O'Neil turns 45. And Jay Lethal turns 37. On April 30th, Abdul Bashir, Sean Daivari, turns 38. And also on the 30th, El Hijo de Fantasma, Santos Escobar, turns 38. May 1st, Joe Hendry turns 34. On 2nd, The Rock turns 50. Can you believe The Rock is 50?
The People's Champ is 50.
May 2nd would have been the 59th birthday of Ray Washington Trailer Jr., a.k.a. Big Bubba Rogers, the Big Boss Man, the Boss, the Guardian Angel, and the Big Boss Man. Born in Dallas, Texas, was a prison guard in Marietta, Georgia. He began working in the Jim Crockett Promotions as enhancement talent until head booker Dusty Rhodes saw potential in Trailer. He would be repackaged as Big Bubba Rogers, a silent but violent bodyguard for Jim Cornette. He would leave and go to the WWF, repackaged as the Big Boss Man, and of course the rest is history. On September 22, 2004, Trailer died of a heart attack while his sister was visiting him. He was just 41. Trailer was posthumously inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he was actually a really close friend of Terry Runnels. I believe he even gave her away at one of her weddings past Dustin. And when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, she had one of his action figures with her for it. But yeah, just a quick look at some of the other stuff involving him. born May 2nd, 63, died September 22nd, 2004, debuted in 85, trained by Ted Allen. He worked for Jim Crockett Promotions, NWA, UWF, and he was feuding with One Man Gang sometimes as well. So it's interesting that their careers collided so much, along with Duggan, basically, as well. People remember he turned face on the Brother Love Show when he got the title back from Jake Roberts and realized that Slick got money for it instead of doing it legit. And so then that broke up the Twin Towers on that one. Unfortunately, some of his accomplishments, he didn't get many titles. He was number 23 in PWI 592. He did win the UWF Heavyweight Championship one time, four-time hardcore champion in WWE, one-time WWE Tag Team Champion. That was with Ken Shamrock, and as you mentioned, Hall of Fame in 2016. Wrestling Observer Newsletter, though, were starting off nice, and then it just went downhill from them, because in 1987, he was the most improved. But by 96, he had the worst gimmick, the worst feud in 96 against John Tenta, the worst feud in 99 against The Big Show, worked the worst match in 99, The Kennel from Hell, against Al Snow. So, unfortunately, got to take the good with the bad, and WCW really had a lot of bad with him as well, when the fact is they couldn't come up with a single name that stuck for him, and they did go with the Guardian Angels out of New York. In that organization, they used to appear on Geraldo and stuff like that, but that did not last long. So rest in peace, Ray Traylor, and happy birthday posthumously.
All right. May 3rd marks the birth of Stuart Edward Hart, a.k.a. Stu Hart, marking his 107th birthday. Of course, he was born in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. Stu would compete in amateur wrestling around the age of 14 after joining the Edmonton YMCA, learning the style of catch wrestling, winning many competitions and medals. He would play for the Edmonton Eskimos for 2 years, enlist in the Canadian Navy, and serve as the director of athletics. It was during this time he was introduced to pro wrestling. Of course, the rest is history. He would wrestle a tiger, a bear, open Stampede Wrestling, and for decades torture young and upcoming wrestlers in his dungeon at his home. Thank you, Stu, for molding so many superstars. Stu was a longtime supporter and mentor of the Calgary community, as he supported more than 30 charities and civic organizations. He was married for 53 years to the oldest woman in the world, Helen Smith. The couple would have 12 children, many of whom would have some involvement in the business. He would die of a stroke and would be posthumously inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame 2010 and is a member of the first WON Hall of Fame class, being 1996.
That would be Wrestling Observer Newsletter.
That's it. Bam. That's why you're here.
And he gave him and Helen gave a lot of fuel to the fire for Jerry Lawler's one-liners.
That was a good time. Very
skewed with both Owen and Brett.
May 4th would have been the 88th birthday of Harry Masayoshi Fujiwara. Of course, you know him as the Devious One, Mr. Fuji. He, a little bit on him. Born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii, Fujiwara would win his first championship within a month of his debut. He would win the NWA Hawaii tag titles with King Curtis Ikea January of 66. During his early career, he would wrestle across various NWA territories, most notably NWA Pacific Northwest Wrestling in Portland, where he was a heavyweight champion and four-time tag team champ.
If I recall King Curtis Ikea was also the guy who was the dungeon master or whatever Kevin Sullivan.
In 72, now known as Mr. Fuji, he would join the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. He teamed with Professor Toru Tanaka, and the duo were managed by the Grand Wizard. He would hold the WWF and WWF tag titles four times with Tanaka and once with Mr. Sato. In his various stints with the WWF, Kasi Freddie Blassie would also manage Mr. Fuji and Tanaka. Fuji would wrestle in many forms of the NWA territories and in AWA. Fuji would retire from full-time in-ring competition in 1985. Fuji, of course, would become a legendary heel manager, helping his wrestlers win by distraction by either throwing salt in their eyes or whack the opponent with his cane, of course. The list of men he managed is long, including George Animal Steel, his first management duties, Don Morocco, Jim Neidhart, Demolition, The Powers of Pain, and former WWF champion The Mighty Yokozuna, and so many more. Post-wrestling career, he lived in Knoxville, Tennessee, operating a wrestling school for a short time, and was part-time usher at a Knoxville movie theater. Believe it or not, Fuji was voted Wrestling Observer's Newsletter's Worst Manager of the Year Award 11 out of 12 years from 84 to 95. What the frig is wrong with that newsletter? Paul Jones was the only other winner in that span, getting the honor in 1986. I mean, not winner, loser.
It's Dave Meltzer, and surprisingly, with his hard-on for Japanese wrestling, he hated this Japanese gentleman.
Yeah, I thought Fuji was one of the better ones, I thought. He was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2007 by his Fuji Vice co-star, Don Morocco. On August of 28th, 2016, Fuji would pass away in Clarksville, Tennessee. He was 82. He had 7 children, 13 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. Some more birthdays. May 4th, we got Scott Armstrong, turns 63. Ryan Shamrock, it turns 43. Wonder what she looks like now. Orange Cassidy turns 38. And Brooke Hogan turns 34. And May 5th, it is a happy 83rd birthday to William F. Watts Jr., a.k.a. Bill Watts. And that is it for This Week in Wrestling. Of course, the This Week in Wrestling history is compiled from the vast land of Google, Wikipedia, CageSideSeats.com, and most importantly, from fans and journalists that had front row seats to history. And always a big thank you to our sponsor, CoolBet. CoolBet.com and sportsbook betting and casino games. Stay cool and bet responsibly.
Yeah, and we also want to thank Camerlock Pure Wrestling, bringing back the golden age of wrestling, Catch as Catch Can style, and everything that involves that. Saturday, May 14th, we are back in Aylmer, Ontario. Doors open at 6, bell time 7. Tickets are just $20, and you're going to get some great wrestling action. It is sponsored by the Rusty Wrench, Domino's Pizza, and Hammerlock Apparel. So go and get tickets, join us, and you'll have a great 2 hours of wrestling action on a Saturday night. And as I said before, I get to make my in-ring debut and see, make sure I don't flub up while announcing all the great action that is going to happen and bringing the talent to the ring and see what happens there. So please join us.
You're going to do fine.
I think so. But please,
and of course, a shout out to all of our genres listeners. And I just wanted to get that one in. Continue.
Yep, no problem. Like I said, May 14th, Aylmer, Ontario. If you're in the area, anywhere in Ontario, make the drive. It's going to be well worth it. And we're also going to be starting to get you geared up for London Comic Con. Have more information as that comes along. We want to always give a shout out to our original scumbags that basically were the inspiration for the name. And I'm sure if you attended Shockstock this past weekend, they thank you for your attendance and look forward to seeing you next year at Shockstock 2023. So until then, we want to wish you a great day, evening, wherever you're listening to this. And we'll see you next time on This Week in History.